Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello and welcome to the Leaders Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse.com. This is Peter Matthews, and I would just like to thank you for joining us today. We have the host, Chief Richard Gassaway. We'll go over a few questions that we've received. I just want to say thank you to everybody for sending in the questions and the feedback we've received. It's nice to hear what people think. And if you do have any suggestions or comments or questions for Chief Gassaway, please feel free to send us an email at podcast@firehouse.com. Chief, we'll start off with a question today that came in the email just recently, and it was a response to a podcast from last month. It says, in a recent podcast, you suggested that we invite our elected officials to a training burn and show them what we do at a fire. I like that idea. In fact, we have invited our elected officials to come to a training burn, but none of them have accepted our offer. How can we get them to come to the training burn or take a greater interest in the department?
That's a good question. I wish I'd have spent more time in the last show telling people how to make that happen, so I'm kind of glad he wrote in, and it opens up a good opportunity for dialogue. I think the first thing that comes to my mind when I hear a question like that is why? Why would the elected officials not want to take an interest in the fire department? Assuming that their purpose for holding elected office is righteous and that they're wanting to do good for their communities and good for their constituents, you would think that they would have a vested interest in the success of all the services provided to their community, including the fire department. So, they're not interested. Why is that? I think the brings me back to what you'll hear me speak of often is one of Stephen Covey's seven habits of highly effective people, and that is to seek first to understand, then to be understood. And I think that this writer has an opportunity to seek first to understand where the elected officials are coming from. Why aren't they coming? Why don't they have interest in the fire department's invitation to come to a house burn? And I think it'd be foolish to jump to a conclusion as to why that is. Even though they might have an inkling or suspect something, until they talk to the elected officials directly and one-on-one, they really don't know. And that's where the true answer is going to flush out. But let's just play through a couple of these. One is that they just may have been too busy for that particular date that was set. Maybe there was something else going on that they were tied up. Maybe they didn't have enough time to prepare and plan, and it just wasn't a good date for them. And if that's the case, then you find that out. You know better for the next time. Give them more advance notice. And I know sometimes that's hard to do when you have an acquired structure that comes along to be able to plan far out, but give them as early notice as possible if that's the reason. Second one is maybe they're just disinterested. Maybe they just don't have a particular interest in what the fire department's doing or how they're doing it or why they're doing it. And if that's the case, then that begs to be an opportunity to help them be interested, and we'll talk a little bit about how to do that. Third is they may have some issue with the fire department or with people in the fire department. Maybe there's something that happened in the past. Maybe there's some baggage. Maybe something has made them not feel comfortable or welcome by the fire department, and they would not be comfortable coming around to a house burn when they don't feel as though they're welcomed in the company of firefighters. Again, that would flush out when you talk to them and sense what if they have an issue, what that is. Finally, there may be a few other reasons that I'm just not coming up on top of my head, but finally, they may just be genuinely afraid to engage in the act of firefighting. Not everyone is cut out to be firefighters. And that's why there's a great admiration for firefighters, because people say you got to be crazy to do what firefighters do. You know, it's hot and it's dangerous and you can get hurt and you can get burned and it's dirty work, and it could be that just the thought of fighting a fire overwhelms them to where they'd say thanks but no thanks. That's just not what I'm cut out to do, and you know, I know my limitations. So that also could be a reason. So first is to seek out the reason why. If you find out that there is an issue, then work to resolve that issue. You're never going to be able to have them come to a training burn and feel comfortable in trusting you and in that relationship if there's baggage, if there's issues there. So if that's the case, you first have to work through those issues. If you sense that they're just not willing to take the risks of being firefighters and going in on acquired structure burns, then start small. Invite them to something else that the fire department is doing, another drill, maybe an auto extrication drill, or maybe just a search and rescue drill where there isn't going to be any real fire and smoke, something to where they can at least get, you can get some gear on them and let them walk a short distance in the boots or in the lives of a firefighter. And if it isn't the, you know, I'd call it the, you know, the grandmother load of the all experiences, and that is taking them on a structural firefight. If it isn't that, that's okay. It can be something far less than that, so long as they come away with a better appreciation for what the fire department's doing, how they're doing it, what your needs are. You know, if you're going to get them to come and they're going to show up and they're going to participate, make sure you have some agenda about what it is you want them to learn while they're there. Just don't have them come and stand around. Have a schedule. We want to make sure that you get to do this, you get to do this. We want to make sure that you know about these things that we're doing, these challenges that we have, these needs for equipment. Look, we're doing this with this equipment that's outdated, and there's much more modern equipment that we could do it with, so that they're seeing it firsthand instead of just hearing about it in the presentation at a council or town meeting. So make sure that if you bring them, you use their time wisely, and they come away with some takeaway messages, so to speak. Now, what happens if you try all that and they're just still not interested? They just don't want to engage the fire department. Just basically a disinterest. Well, then I would say, one, don't stop inviting them, no matter what the issue. If they're too busy, if they're disinterested, if they have an issue, or if they're just genuinely afraid, don't stop inviting them. Don't stop extending the opportunity to say, you're welcome in our house, you're welcome in our station, you're welcome in the things that we do. So always continue. I don't mean invite them every week. You don't want to be annoying about it, but when you have a significant drill coming up and you think that you could involve them, send them an invite. Let them know what's going on and that they're continually welcomed, even if they're not taking you up on the advantage of doing it. But in the end, they may still not choose to participate. So what if they don't? I think the next best alternative is to go out into the community and find some community leaders who you could involve in this process of educating them about what the fire department does. Find community leaders that you can invite to come to drills or to training sessions so that they're able to be more informed, better educated, and maybe they can become the advocates for the fire department. When you need something, this person will be able to come to the council meeting and say, from a citizen's perspective, I went out, I trained with the fire department, I saw firsthand what their needs were, the challenges that they had because they didn't have the right equipment, and as a citizen, as a taxpayer, I'm here to tell you that I think that we should be supporting the fire department with X or Y, whatever that is that the support needs to come from. It's an unfortunate fact of life, but elected officials, from my experiences and observations, tend to listen greater to their constituency, the folks who elect them into office, than they do staff or the people who, you know, work for the city, even though some of us may be those very same people who elected them into office. The citizenry has a very strong voice with elected officials, and if they don't, then those elected officials tend not to stay elected officials too long when they send a message that they're not listening to their constituency. So if you can get this community leader or leaders, a group of, to come and participate and be involved, then you have advocates. You have people who can go to the council either at a meeting or even one-on-one. You know, maybe they both serve in an organization like Rotary or Kiwanis together. So at the next Rotary meeting, there they are sitting next to somebody on your council saying, I was with the fire department over the weekend, and they conducted this training, and here's what I learned, and here's what their needs are. And, you know, and so you have somebody besides the firefighters whose voices are reaching the council. You could also try having a citizens fire academy, where you bring have a structured program, bring citizens in over the course of a 6-week or an 8-week period, maybe one evening a week, or half a day on Saturday, something like that. Where you give them a formalized program that introduces them into the fire department and what the fire department does. And then it culminates at the end with some grand exercise or grand training session, whether it's a live burn or, you know, a mock disaster. It doesn't have to be anything huge and elaborate, but something that allows them to see it all come together, to see it all the pieces of the things that they learn at the academy come together, and they say, aha, I get it. I see what the fire department does. You have not only a well-educated resident, but hopefully you have somebody who's a fan of the fire department when it's done that can go out and carry that message not only to the elected officials, but to other people in the community as well. And boy, I don't think we'd ever shun away from having those kind of folks on our side, especially when we have a need that isn't being filled. The last one that I want to offer up to this one is to find somebody who's has a media connection, television or radio or newspaper, and invite somebody from the media to come and participate in a live fire training with the fire department or a training exercise with the fire department, and compel them, say, when you're done, I want you to write a story or do a news segment on the TV or on the radio about your experience in being a firefighter for a day. Tell the people what it was like, how the challenges that you had to deal with, the things that you had to overcome, how hard the work was, how important it is to have good equipment and well funding or good funding, and get the community educated through the media, through this, you know, hopefully the person in the media is someone who's well-respected in the community, a newspaper writer or a television personality who is then telling the community, wow, that I have the experience of a lifetime going out and participating in this opportunity with the fire department. Now, I'm going to pause for a second, take a deep breath, and say one caveat to all this is, before you do this, you should check with your risk manager or your legal folks and make sure that you have the right waiver in place and the right waiver signed, so that if something happens, you have whatever your legal counsel would tell you is the right protections in place to be able to not get the fire department or the city into any legal issues if they would happen to get hurt. The second caveat I would say is, if you're going to take people into acquired structures, be it council folks or influential citizens or the media, you're not there to give them the down and dirty, super hot, boy, you know, if we're not melting the helmets, they're not getting the experience. That's really not what we're wanting to achieve. All we need is a little bit of smoke and enough to darken the environment so that they can't really see what's going on, and let them pull some hose and let them find the mannequin. We're not training them to the firefighter one level. We don't want them to be firefighter ones when they come out. We just want them to be able to observe the experience or live the experience of being a firefighter for a day. You're not making them a firefighter for life. Although that can happen. You never know that that person might come away and say, you know, this was great. I think this is something I want to do. That's a bonus that comes at the end that you can't necessarily predict. You're not trying to take them to the extremes of firefighting. You're trying to give them an introduction into what you do. So whatever you do in that area, make sure that you're doing it in acquired structures following the NFPA 1403 burn standard, and you're doing things safely and in moderation when you're using it as for the benefit of educating elected officials and civilians.
Okay, Rich, that's some great stuff. You mentioned bringing the media, and is it the Congressional Fire Service Institute does that every year, I believe, with some of the staffers from Capitol Hill, and you know, Firehouse.com covers that every year. And I remember this year reading one of the staff members' representatives was at the site, said something along the lines of, "Wow, I didn't realize they needed to have all this equipment just to put a fire out." And so, that's definitely good advice, especially the having a waiver or some kind of paperwork filled out to protect your butt should anything happen. And as far as bringing the media, is that something you should do every time you have a live burn or some kind of training exercise? Obviously, I don't think you'd want them there every time you have some kind of training, but try to invite the media as much as possible. And, for instance, a thermal imaging camera, trying to show them, okay, here's why we need to have three of these, because this is what it does. What do you think about that?
I think that you should give the media a heads up when you're doing significant training events like burning in an acquired structure or a mock disaster. You surely don't want the media to find out about it by accident or have it come in as a news story that there's a house on fire and then they respond out like they're covering a house fire to find out it's just a training event. So I think giving them a heads up and an invitation to come is always good. They're not always going to be able to come out. If you can hook them with, here's why we want you to come, because we're going to be doing something that's special that would be newsworthy, all the better. If they don't come, send a press release when you're done with the training and say, here's what we did. Maybe send along some photos. Sometimes newspapers will print private photos with credits. Sometimes they want it to be their own photographers. I've found out. So, you know, don't get too knotted up if they don't want to use your photos. There's reasons for it. But send a press release out to say this is what we did and kind of give them the summary of it. The best thing that could happen is that you'd get a little, you know, blurb on the bottom of page 3 that says the fire department burned a house for training over the weekend. You can't go wrong with that kind of positive press in your community. So you never know for sure if the media will be able to cover it. Let me share too, Pete, when you asked that question, it raised one point of something that I had heard done as well, and that is sometimes there are local cable channels that have like little local media news shows. So like local cable TV, you can turn on, you know, channel 10 you know, somebody has a show that spotlights things going on in the community, or a local school has a video production class. If you can get a hold of that local cable TV or the high school's video production class and say, we're going to have a live fire training burn, and we'd like you to come out and make that into a television show. And if they take you up on the offer, assign somebody to be with them to narrate the program that says, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it, this is why we're doing it. It really isn't enough for them just to shoot the video and to put that on TV, because out of context, the civilian layperson doesn't know what they're watching. I mean, they see the smoke color change from black to white, but they don't know what that means. They see the firefighters dragging an 1¾-inch line through the front door, but they don't have any idea how much it weighs. And they see the firefighters and all this turnout gear, but they don't have any idea what it costs. So having somebody who can narrate that, that says, you know, you see this group of firefighters, each ensemble of their turnout gear and their air pack, you know, that weighs an extra 60 pounds, and it costs, you know, $5,000 to have them outfitted like that, and they're going to be in temperatures of, you know, 300 or 400 degrees at the floor level, and use it to tell the story of what they're seeing on the video. It isn't just enough to see it, and it's really beneficial to have somebody who understands what's going on right there with them, with the microphone. They don't have to be on the, they don't even have to be on the screen, the firefighter. So they're like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be the movie star. You don't have to be. Be behind the scenes. Just provide the voiceover so that as they're showing the video of us burning this house and all the things that we're doing, you're using this as an education to help the community understand. And, you know, if you say something that's goofy, those folks can edit. They can take something out. You know, if you misspeak or say the wrong thing, you can say to them, you know, I said this and that wasn't exactly accurate, so let's make sure that gets edited out. They'll work with you. That's part of what they're there to learn in video production class, or as part of this local cable TV. And, you know, and they might be able to set some of it to music and put some nice graphics and really make it a nice production. I've seen a few of those, and I got to tell you, I've been pretty impressed with the quality. And then those folks then earn, you know, credit, you know, toward graduation for doing that kind of work.
Okay. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back here in just a second.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox here on Radio at firehouse.com. Peter Matthews here with Chief Rich Gassaway. Chief, I know that you obviously do the podcast for firehouse.com, and I know you travel around teaching some programs. I met you with the iChiefs conference last year in Dallas. For our listeners that they are listening, do you have any upcoming events that you may be at, or, you know, where have you been recently? Anything interesting you've seen or learned?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. Actually, every time I'm on the road, I'm learning. You know, even though I may be the one facilitating the program, I am certainly the student as well. And I have had a few wonderful stops along the way here recently, and I would like to just say hello to some folks. First would be to the folks in Evans, Colorado. Had an opportunity to do a program at the Ames Community College. Chief Warren Jones there, a very progressive fire service leader, PhD student, really doing some cutting-edge things in Evans, and was really quite impressed with the participation of the folks that were in that program. Secondly, I was in Tennessee at the Tennessee Fire and Codes Academy, and the director there, Roger Hawks, is the administrator of an unbelievable campus, something that would be the envy of the fire service. The Tennessee Fire and Codes Academy has spent about $28 million making a fire service training center that is unlike anything that I've had the opportunity to see. Classrooms, dormitories, cafeteria, a couple of burn buildings, burn pits, on like 300 acres of land in central Tennessee. Just a phenomenal facility that is second to none. Got a chance to go down and talk with those folks about leadership. Again, very engaged group of people. Couple other ones that I've been to recently: Springdale Township, Pennsylvania, just outside of Pittsburgh. It's actually my second visit to the folks in Springdale, and I'd like to say hello to them, thank them for inviting me back to do the Leaders Toolbox program. Town of Menasha, Wisconsin, and had an opportunity to go there and talk with folks on leadership there. Again, a very engaged group of people, well attended, like 60-some folks. Menasha, just south of Appleton, where the home of Pierce Manufacturing is, had some folks who work for Pierce in the program. That was nice to have those folks there as well. So it's really been nice to be able to take the Leader's Toolbox and some of the lessons on the road and talk with people about their leadership challenges and learn from them about their leadership experiences. Upcoming, going to be at the FDIC coming up here in April and doing a program there that actually talks about the fireground commander and fireground command decision making under stress, something that has particularly interested me, and I've done some of my doctoral work on understanding how fireground commanders make critical decisions under stress, some of the things that influence those decisions, the areas that mistakes are commonly made, how to avoid them, and essentially just how to be a better fireground commander and understand how it is that we make fireground command decisions. So if you're at the FDIC, I'll be there Wednesday morning. Stop by, say hello. I'd like to talk with you and welcome you into the program.
Okay, well, it sounds like you had a full plate for the last couple of weeks, and that academy sounds like a great place. It's unfortunate not everybody can have such a facility, but eventually down the road, hopefully everybody will have something similar so that firefighters can get the best training possible. With that, we'll break into the second question for this show, and it's from a Forest Service veteran. I've been a member of the Forest Service for 30 years. The first captain I worked with ran a very tight crew. We thought this guy was crazy. As time goes on, I see why he ran his crew the way he did. I have observed a form of digression in the Forest Service as it relates to how leaders guide their crews on a day-to-day basis. I see a day-to-day activities declining, and in general, things just not getting done that the way they used to be. In short, it appears that there is a lack of adult supervision. In my opinion, this comes from promoting younger people who don't have the ability to step up and be a leader or be a boss. I call it just being one of the guys. I like to think that this isn't only happening in my department. Can you shed some light on this problem? And I'm sure it is happening all over. So.
Well, the way he starts off is kind of reminds me of an old saying that I heard someone a while back in a class say, the older I get, the smarter my parents have become. And he says, what he describes there is, I used to think that the person I worked for was crazy, but now that I'm getting older, I'm starting to see the wisdom of the way they provided their leadership. And in true, as we all get older, hopefully we get wiser. And I think that he thought he had somebody who did things in a kind of a strange way, and now he's starting to realize that maybe that was the proper way. But at the heart of the matter here is that he describes a situation where he's working for somebody who bosses differently now than the boss he had when he came into the fire department. And that's that's about as common day as any of us can ever face in a fire service. Is we're never going to work for the same person, and we're never going to have the same personality, and we're never going to have the same priorities from the folks that we work for. So if you're not doing the same thing the way you did it when you first got on the fire department, I'd first ask, well, why? What's changed? What's different today than the way you used to do it? Now, he doesn't go into detail, and so I don't really know what it is that they used to do, but maybe the way they used to do and the way they used to do it doesn't necessarily equate to being a better way than what things are being done today and how those things are being done. So before he says, it was better then than it is now, which he didn't say explicitly, and I don't know that I want to jump to that conclusion, I'd say what's changed that makes things differently, done differently today than they were done before? You know, if then your department didn't do EMS and now they do EMS, you're going to be doing things differently. The second question that comes to my mind, the fact that they're doing things differently now than they did before, is so what? So what if you're doing things differently now? What's the impact? What is the consequence of doing things differently now than you did them before? Is there a consequence to what is happening now under somebody whose leadership style is different than what was happening before? And maybe you got used to being under a command and control kind of leader, And now you have somebody who comes in who is maybe a little more participative in their style, and you don't really like that. You'd rather be the kind of person who is told what to do and when and where and how to do it, versus somebody who is maybe a little softer in their approach and who says please and thank you, and instead of barking out the orders. And it could be this guy is just feeling a little bit uneasy because this boss has a different approach than the one that he used to have. You know, it kind of makes me a little concerned when he says, we used to think this guy was crazy. Well, I'd sure like to know what that guy was doing that made him think that he was crazy. You know, I guess that's crazy as a term open for interpretation. I'd like to understand a little bit more about what crazy meant, but we don't have that benefit to talk to him live. The third thing is, you know, so I've asked why, you know, what changed. The second one, so what? And the third question that I have is, what are you going to do about it? Not what is somebody else going to do about it. I'm speaking directly to the person who wrote the question. What are you going to do about it? If things aren't going along the way that you think they should, and the fire department isn't accomplishing what you think the fire department should accomplish, then what are you willing to do to try to change that and make it different? And the concept of, you know, what are you willing to do comes from a book that I was told about recently and read, and it's a very short book called The Question Behind the Question. And it's a great short read that says, instead of saying, why is this happening to me, or why can't things be different, or why can't it be better, or why do people have to be like this, or how come this isn't like this, or otherwise, is to ask the question, and what can I do to make it better? What can I do to make it different? What can I do to improve this situation? So if you're working for what you describe, I think he said a young person who doesn't have the skill set that you think they should have to be a leader, what are you willing to do to try to change that? How have you extended your experience? This, I think this person is sounds like they've been 30 years they'd been around. You've been around 30 years. So if you know what good leadership looks like, how about coaching this young person into how to be a good leader instead of sitting back complaining about the fact that they're not the kind of leader that you want them to be? It sounds like you're being quick to judge and not being so quick to extend yourself to help them become better. And that's not really fair. I mean, that's kind of like complaining without offering a solution to the problem. That's not fair. If you want to judge this young leader without giving them the benefit of learning from your coaching and investing some of your time into helping them be better, then that's not fair. That's just complaining for the sake of complaining. Now, if you have a young promoted officer who doesn't know how to do their job, this is an opportunity to fix it. Now, you can fix it or you can tolerate it, but the last thing you should do is just stand on the sideline and complain. I see this as an opportunity. Boy, if I had a boss to come in that I didn't think really knew how to be a good boss for me, I'd see this as an opportunity for me to coach and educate him as to how to be a good boss. And I think what you're describing with this young person is a moldable mind, a person who wants to be good and wants to genuinely do a good job, but maybe just doesn't know how. You talk about adult supervision, I think is how it was worded. You know, the department lacks adult supervision. Well, again, I got to go back to picking on that statement a little bit and ask the question, do mature adults need supervision? I think the answer to that is no. I think mature adults need leadership. They need someone to give them some guidance and some direction and some communication about expectations, but I don't know that mature adults need to babysat or have direct day-to-day supervision. In fact, if you're that kind of leader, or maybe the leader you're describing from when you got in 30 years ago was that kind of person, I'd say he didn't do you or your organization any service by being the kind of leader who's continually honking over people and telling them continually what to do, when, where, why, and how to do it. I think the great leader sets a high bar of expectation and makes sure that everybody knows what it is that they want to have done, and then turns them loose and allows them to go out and do these great things without a lot of direct supervision. And you might say, well, we don't have the kind of people in our organization that you can do that with. Okay, well, then that's in itself symptomatic of a problem that's bigger than just this one young supervisor who isn't performing to your expectation. The last one, though, and I can't let this one go by, even though I've been pretty harsh on the writer of this, is his observation about this young leader who just wants to be one of the guys. And I think this is a really tough thing for anyone who makes the transition from being the co-worker to being the boss. But I think it's especially challenging in the fire service, especially when we develop lifetime friendships and relationships and brotherhoods and sisterhoods, and we work shifts with these people, and we do things socially with these people, and then we're promoted to be the boss. And how do we make that transition from being the buddy to the boss? And there's lots of stuff written out on it. Go out and Google search, buddy to boss and the challenges. And a lot of folks out there are a lot more articulate than me that you can read up on their pearls of wisdom on that. But I would say that the transition from buddy to boss is a significant challenge, especially in the fire service. And when you make that transition from being the buddy to the boss, it doesn't mean that you stop being friendly to the people who you perceive to be friends of yours. That's not what I'm saying. You don't just say, okay, now I'm the boss, and now I have to be a hard butt with you because now I'm the boss. Being a boss isn't about having to be a hard butt. Being a boss or being a leader is about getting people to do things that they may not necessarily want to do in a way that they enjoy doing those things toward accomplishing a commonly shared goal of the organization or of your shift or of your supervisor. And that is the essence of leadership. Nowhere do you read in any leadership book, I got right here sitting on my desk right in front of me, the U.S. Army Leadership Field Manual. And it's in its like 50th printing. And nowhere in there does it say to be a leader of people that you got to be mean or demanding to the point that you're obnoxious when you're trying to get folks to do things that you want to have them do. There's a nice way to be a boss. It kind of reminds me, Pete, of a movie that I had watched once with my kids. And for those who've had kids 12 or 14 years ago, you might remember a movie that was out called Babe. And it was a movie about a little pig, and they were on this farm, and there was a sheep herder was trying to teach a dog. A new dog to the to him how to herd the sheep, and I'm sorry, it wasn't the owner, it was another dog. They were talking dogs, and one dog's trying to teach the other one how to herd the sheep, and he's teaching me, now you got to go out there and you got to bite him on the heels and get him to turn and get him to flock up, so this dog goes out there and he tries to do this, and the sheep are just really mean in return back to him. And he comes over to the sidelines, and Babe, who's the pig, says to this dog, "Why did you do that? You're normally such a very nice dog. Why did you go out and be so mean to them and bite at them and bark at them like that?" And the dog says, "Because I needed them to herd up into the corral here, and that's how to do it." And Babe, the pig, said, "Did you ever think about just asking them to do that and explain to them why you want them to do it? Instead of going out and barking at them and biting at them, maybe if you just ask them nicely, they'd be willing to do what you want to have done." So this person who's transitioning from the buddy to the boss doesn't mean you have to be a mean boss, although it sounds like that this guy might be framing it up that he wants to just be one of the guys. Well, when you become the boss, you're no longer just one of the guys. You're the boss. And with that, being the boss comes, some gold on your collar, and maybe a little extra pay in your pocket, but along with it also comes a greater responsibility that means that you are now the one accountable to see that the work gets done. And if you can establish the kind of relationship with folks where you can be one of the guys and still get the work done, that's the win-win. Nobody says you have to stop being one of the guys or start being mean or separate yourself from the crew to be able to be a good, effective leader of people. But to be a good, effective leader, the work has to get done. And in the process of transitioning, one of the things that comes along with now being the boss is also being the one who is responsible. So for this young person who he's writing about, I'd say realize that you stepped into a whole new role in the organization, and that is the one who is responsible now to make sure that things get done, to make sure the leadership is provided, to make sure that the rules are followed, to make sure that things are well communicated, that people are doing what they're supposed to do, and to make sure there's accountability when people aren't doing what they're supposed to do. That's part of your job. That's part of the minimum expectations. So for that young person, there's nice ways to do that, but that is your job, and that is part of what you have to accept when you take that promotion.
And as a young officer, say in a volunteer firehouse where you're going to probably stay assigned to that firehouse, I guess it would be a good idea to simply say, hey, listen, okay, now that I'm your lieutenant or I'm your captain or I'm your sergeant, you know, we're still friends, but now I'm at a different level. Is there some advice to kind of set that record straight a little bit? You know, how do you get that word out to the other members?
I think there is, Pete. Regardless of whether you're in a volunteer department or regardless of whether you're running a shift, an on-duty shift in a larger department, I think that when you get promoted, you sit down with the folks that you're going to be the boss of and say, let's talk about what this new change in my life means for us, means for our relationship, means for how we're going to get along, and let's talk about how we're going to get the work done, what I expect of you. Let's talk about what you expect of me, okay? And maybe I can be the kind of boss that gives you what you expect to have, and I don't have to become the hard butt or the authoritative person. If you tell me the best way that I can be a boss for you, then and that gets the work done, we have a win-win, because you make my job easy by telling me how it is that I can be a good boss for you. Imagine that novel concept. Go to the people who you work for and say, this is the things I need to be done. What's the best that I can do as the boss to help you get those things done so that we're being successful and maybe having some fun along the way in getting it done? So whether you're in a volunteer department or newly promoted on a shift, talk to the folks and say, this is what we need to have done. How do we all go about doing this in a way that it makes my life easy and makes your life easy? That's the win-win of being a supervisor. It isn't about forcing people to do what they don't want to do. It's about finding a way to get them to do it in a way that they want to do it, or they enjoy it, or at least tolerate it. What better way to do that than ask them, how can we accomplish this?
Okay, Chief. I really don't have much to rebut on that, so we can finish up. Again, thank you today, Chief Gassaway, and thank you to everybody who's listening. If you do have any questions for the Chief, if you're seeking some advice, need some help on figuring something out, or suggestions or comments for the show, please do drop us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Thank you, Chief, and we'll see you guys again next month.
Okay, hope to see everybody at the FDIC.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.